Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Much appreciate you tuning in for a Football Friday when we will also be celebrating the one-year anniversary of the Washington Nationals winning the World Series. A lot to get to on the show, a lot of fun to be had. We do have to say right here off the top, Chad Dukes is no longer with 106.7 The Fan. Our company has learned of inappropriate comments that he made in episodes of his personal podcast, and they have a zero-tolerance policy for those comments. Our focus on this show, myself, Danny, Tom Darr, is going to be on sports and doing the best show that we can. And with that in mind, Danny, before we get into the one-year anniversary of the Nats winning the World Series coming up in just a few minutes, I guess we could start with last night, Thursday Night Football. You and I both thought Atlanta would be frisky in this game. You picked them outright to win the game. And the fact is, I hadn't gotten to watch Carolina as much as I did, as extensively as I did last night. Thought they were okay, you know, this season so far, but I liked their offense, some numbers that I'd seen. I think they are probably what we thought they were. They're closer to being a contender maybe than was anticipated coming into the year. But 3-5 Carolina, Danny. 2-6 Atlanta. Kind of an ugly NFC South game last night.
Yeah, Carolina's very much just okay. They're aggressively okay. You look at their losses, by the way. There's no shame losing last night to Atlanta, who's pretty bad. Yeah, divisional game. I wouldn't say is terribly shameful. But, you know, dropping a game to the Raiders, close one, who we now know are pretty good. They got beat by the Bucs, who may be the best team in the NFC. They lost to the Bears in a close ball game, one score. A field goal loss to New Orleans last week. Carolina's not terrible. They're also not particularly good either. Probably not quite ready for prime time. Maybe not quite ready to take that next step. And, you know, year one of a new head coach with Teddy Bridgewater, the ultimate placeholder, not going to kill you, quarterback who made some plays with his feet. And, you know, spreading the ball around. Early on, it looked like a couple guys were in for massive days. And, you know, they've got some weapons in Carolina. They got the nice building blocks to kind of start things. But they're not quite ready to start competing with the likes of a New Orleans or Tampa at this stage. But Atlanta just couldn't lose in gut-punching ways forever, right? It just I had this feeling that sometimes regression happens in a positive way. Freaky, once-in-a-lifetime losses happened to Atlanta basically all within a cluster of a handful of years. Everything from 28-3 in the Super Bowl to their ridiculous loss against the Cowboys to everything else that's happened to them. They were due, and I hate just saying due theory, but they were due to have like a normal game. That happens sometimes, too. That's allowed, you know?
And they had that, finally. Even though their offense last night, while it moved the ball pretty effectively, was awful as they got close to the end zone. They kicked four field goals in this game early in the proceedings. You know, ultimately, Todd Gurley punches a touchdown across, and they finally made a play on the goal line. But Matt Ryan threw the ball 30 times, had basically close to 300 yards, and no passing touchdowns. Julio Jones did have a big game, 7 for 137. Calvin Ridley, who's been in and out of the lineup, got banged up. It just seems like that wide receiver core each week takes a turn with who's going to miss time, who's going to get hurt. I watch Carolina, and that's a team that needs Christian McCaffrey back. This is a good example of occasionally you can get that dead cat bounce. Somebody gets hurt, everyone around them gets motivated. The guards, the tackles, the centers in the meeting room and the running backs say, you know what? Let's win one for the Gipper. We all got to be a little bit better. And for a couple of weeks, Mike Davis is fine. But as you get further removed from McCaffrey not being there, you realize how much you miss him, how helpful he is, what a contributor he can be in multiple facets of the game. And I think last night it was pretty clear they needed a weapon. There was a brutal hit on Teddy Bridgewater where he got knocked out of the game. And I don't know how he came back into the game. What a stud Teddy Bridgewater is. I mean, that guy came back from one of the more gruesome knee injuries that we've seen and leg injuries of the last several years in the NFL. Like maybe second to Alex Smith in that regard, right? Then last night he comes back into the game after a blow to the head where I thought he was going to be done for the game and maybe a couple weeks with a concussion. While he was out, though, XFL Paulson got to check out Philip Walker. Did you see that the old XFL right. quarterback was in the game last night?
Congrats to you. Big moment. That's a lot of fun. But, yeah, I was putting kids to bed and kind of, you know, in and out for a few minutes. And so I see the hit on Teddy Bridgewater, and I'm going, well, that's that. That's the Teddy's, you know, not only did he get hit in the head, but it was like he was crunched in an awkward way. I'm going, that's probably a fairly serious injury. And not to make light of it, I'm thinking that's how I've got it categorized. And then by the time I got back downstairs, there's Teddy Bridgewater right back in the game. And I was stunned by that. So I didn't see the entirety of the Philip Walker experience.
There wasn't a lot to see. I'm going to be very honest with you. He came into the game. He threw four passes. One of them hit the intended target. He threw for three yards.
I see 3 yards there next to Philip Walker's name.
Yep, that was kind of the entire experience, if I'm there being very honest with you. But week eight off to a limping start last night with the Falcons beating the Panthers 25-17. Going to be a very good weekend in football. We're going to rank the top five games. You know, among some of the gems, you got 1 o'clock tilts, the Steelers and the Ravens for AFC North supremacy, the Patriots and the Bills with Buffalo having a chance, you'd have to say, Danny, to kind of put a nail in the coffin. Maybe it's a little bit easy and early to say that, but if the Patriots, who are taking on water right now without Julian Edelman, with Cam Newton struggling mightily, having been benched a couple of times in game the last month, if they lose to Buffalo and gain another week on the standings further toward the end of the season and fall further behind the Bills, I got to tell you, man, that they're close to cooked.
Yeah, and what's funny about it is the Bills are taking on water themselves to some degree, right? It's not like some of these other teams, as you just referenced. The Bills aren't great, and they could sort of put the division away and you know, make it just academic here this week. It's kind of crazy how the season has sort of played out. I thought it would be New England, Buffalo, New England with sort of, you know, smoke and mirrors and Belichick just working magic and then winning some ugly games and sort of finding a way to figure out what you don't do well and taking it away and winning gross, and Buffalo with the expectations they might, you know, fall kind of short. It's just crazy, man. This league is so hard to predict so often. For everything you get right, there's 50 things that you go, you know what I didn't see coming? And you can fill in the blanks from there. Always amazing.
The biggest story in football this morning might not be in the NFL. It's actually at the collegiate level, though, where Trevor Lawrence has been diagnosed with the coronavirus. So the first thing you got to do, and obviously we always kind of start with this, this is a virus that has killed a couple hundred thousand people, and ideally because of his age and the physical shape that he's in, he'll have mild symptoms and this won't be any kind of a life-changing occurrence for Lawrence, but you keep your fingers crossed for him and you hope for the best for him to get healthy and that this didn't spread any further within the Clemson program. From a football standpoint, what with us being a sports show that focuses on sport, Trevor Lawrence, the best quarterback in the country, the projected number one overall pick, playing on a team that has designs on winning a national championship. They're a 30-point favorite this week, and they will roll on Boston College without him. But they play Notre Dame next weekend, and I'm not a person who's very high on Notre Dame. I think Clemson might still be able to win that game without Trevor Lawrence. But his status clearly very much in jeopardy for next weekend, and one of the big games on their entire schedule is right around the corner. So this is not the way Dabo Swinney, the ACC, Lawrence obviously was very vocal about wanting to play, drew this up, but it was a risk that you took on when you said, hey, we want to play. We want to be on the field. We will risk getting the coronavirus, and he now has it. So you hope that they can trace how and where he got it potentially or make sure that all of his teammates that were around him are okay. But this is definitely a situation to monitor for Clemson. And I think the reason it's such a big deal, Danny, it goes back to early on during COVID, right, when we heard Von Miller has it and Ezekiel Elliott has it. And it was like these pop-ups where you just screamed that someone had tested positive, and we're like, okay, is that the story? Is that it? But this is the biggest star in college football on the best team in college football who a couple of days before their next game tests positive, and now you don't know how long he's going to be out.
again, far more trivial, as you touched on. All caveats apply. We hope everybody's okay. Now, think about this. This is a poorly drawn analogy, so bear with me. I remember years ago, as you know, I went to GW, right? And they had the last really good team that they had, their best player was a guy named Pops Mensah-Bonsu. He was hurt. GW
Love
at one
Pops.
Point was a top 10 team in the country. Without him, they lost a few games. And it was tournament time. They were clearly a tournament team. And the committee was like, the question would be, do we look at how good they were with Pops, or do we look at what happened without him? And they kind of defaulted to what happened without him and gave GW, I think it was like a 6 seed or a 7 seed, and everyone was really disappointed in that. What does the committee do? What does this group do for the sake of argument? Let's say Clemson loses to Notre Dame without Trevor Lawrence. How do they view it? Do you bump Clemson how far down? Or do you kind of say, well, the best player in the country wasn't available. We don't hold this against them too terribly, and they could still be in the playoff format. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see a couple of things, most notably, though, the results and hoping that it didn't spread, because I think
Absolutely.
That's the big victory that these teams can have is if the protocols they set up do work. You are not going to prohibit this virus from infecting someone all season long. And if you do, wow, way to go. Congratulations, Godspeed. But it shouldn't be a realistic expectation that no one's going to contract the coronavirus if you're traveling the country and playing these games and you got, 90 kids all between 18 and 22 years old, shoulder to shoulder and in the same locker room. But when someone gets it, do all of the procedures that you've put in place work and prevent the spread? And so that, to me, is the big storyline next, in addition to, from a football perspective, whether or not he'd be available against Notre Dame in a major showdown that's a little over a week away. Next on Grant and Danny, it is the bye week for Washington football. This is a week that many of us in this town look forward to all season long because you get to watch football free of frustration for an entire Sunday. What will your number one viewing priority be this coming weekend? We'll ask you about that. And at the bottom of the hour at 10:30, we'll take our first trip down memory lane on this, our celebration, the one-year anniversary of the Nats winning the 2019 World Series on October 30th, 365 days ago. With Danny, I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan.
Hey, guys. I'm Danny Ruggiero here from my pals at Ted Britt Ford. I'm a Ted Britt guy. I can prove it multiple times. Ted Britt customer. Right, Sean. That's right. Years ago, the wife and I were shopping around for cars. We needed something a little bit bigger, right? Because our kid was growing, family's growing, you need more space, you got to haul a bunch of stuff here, there, and everywhere. Anytime you leave the house, it's like you're going camping for the weekend, right? So we test drove a couple different things, settled on the Ford Edge, just right for us. We loved it. And we loved the buying experience, and we couldn't believe the deal we got at Ted Britt Ford. And as we're driving home, I said to the wife, this is true, I said, next time when it's my turn to get a car, that's where I'm going. And that's where I went. And that's where I've been going ever since. And it's where I will go when it's time for another new car. Ted Britt Ford is the best. They've been doing this for more than 60 years. Let them take care of you the way they've taken care of me so many times over. When you buy from Ted Britt Ford, you get Ted Britt for life. It's confidence for life. Powertrain, service loaners, battery replacement, windshield repair, Virginia State inspection, all complimentary for life. These guys are great at what they do. Please go see them and tell them.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Hope everybody is enjoying their Friday. It's a football Friday. And for us, maybe more importantly today, it's the one-year anniversary of the Nationals winning the World Series, and that means that we will be celebrating all day long here on G&D and on The Fan. Grant and Danny, by the way, brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% more on car insurance. Pretty cool to have Geico as our presenting sponsor now. We thank them for joining the show. We appreciate that, and that is a big deal for us. Danny, bye week this weekend, no Washington football team to check out. And so the question becomes, where does your viewing priority lie? You're going to be on your couch, just like you normally would be at 12:57, and instead of getting ready to watch Washington run out of the tunnel and Daron Payne and Kyle Allen on the field just before kickoff, high-fiving, you're going to be watching something else. So what is your number one priority this weekend with the time that you found at your disposal without having to focus on our team here in town?
Obviously non-red zone division, because it's the greatest gift we've been given since air conditioning and fire. But when I major in a game, it's going to be that 1 o'clock piece. There's an honorable mention at 4:25 that we'll talk about here in a moment, but a couple divisional games on the slate. Pittsburgh, Baltimore. I know some people are tired of that rivalry. I get that. This is not your Troy Polamalu, Jamal Lewis rivalry. This is not a game that's going to be 9-6. This is two really good football teams. Pittsburgh is picking up steam as they go. I know they barely held on against Tennessee last week, but I'm telling you, they were the most impressive team for three quarters last week of anybody in the NFL. They were everywhere. They did everything. They were dominating that game. Tennessee came storming back. They deserve credit for that. They're excellent. Baltimore has been unbelievable against everybody but Kansas City. I cannot wait for this matchup. It's marquee. It's awesome. I think Baltimore has made moves with Pittsburgh in mind when they went and traded for one more pass rusher to try to disrupt what it is that Pittsburgh does on offense. These two teams are two of the best five teams in the sport. They've been on a collision course here. They've already been affected by the bye week and one of the postponements because of a COVID breakout. I cannot wait for that 1 o'clock game on Sunday. That's, to me, the best game of the weekend, best game of the season so far.
The first item I'll give you is Dolphins-Rams, 1 o'clock kick in Miami, and the debut as a starter, even though he came in the game and threw two passes, of Tua Tagovailoa, who, when I originally saw him playing at Alabama, I thought, this guy's a little bit too small. 6 foot, 217. He had just gotten on the field, and people said, there's a path for him becoming a really good NFL prospect. And sure enough, after that sophomore season where he kind of broke out, he had become a household name. 43 touchdowns, 6 picks, on his way to being one of the top picks in the draft. And he got hurt and played in 9 games in 2019. But for his college career, you're talking about a guy who was immensely accurate, completed about 70% of his passes over his final two seasons. 87 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. You know, a rating, and they don't matter a ton in college, of close to 200. He was on the top of everyone's draft boards before he got hurt, and Burrow then surpassed him and ran away with the top pick because he had the best season that any college quarterback has probably ever had at LSU last year. But we have forgotten how good and how interesting a player Tua had become with his quickness at moving around in the pocket and his exceptional smarts, and maybe more than anything else, just how accurate he is, how much touch he can put on the football. So I'm curious to see what he looks like. And I'm made more curious, Danny, because the Dolphins were actually playing their best ball over the last couple of years.
That's right.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's always one game away from completely falling apart and imploding, was actually wheeling and dealing, and he was coming off of a couple of strong performances, mid-heater, and they still stuck to their plan and went to Tua. So I cannot wait to see him. He's taking on a really good defense in the Rams, and I find the idea that they are just sticking to the script and going with him despite Fitzpatrick playing well, I find that to be something that I want rewarded. You know, I will pull for Tua to look really good in Miami to show really well against the Rams.
Yeah, they won their last two games by a combined 67-17. Now,
which for the Dolphins, by the way, that's unbelievable. That's the best two-game span they've probably had in years.
So listen, one of those games is against the Jets.
Doesn't matter.
But still, that's still against the Jets. They went to San Francisco and beat them in a way that I still can't get over. That's my can't get over game of the season. It's influenced how I think about everything and everybody that's involved in that game, right? And now San Francisco, of course, has ripped off two straight wins since then to kind of rebound from their low point. But that was a complete and utter domination. Fitzpatrick was unbelievable in that game. And now, after the bye week, as you said, they're sticking to their plan because they know who they are. I want that rewarded. I'm with you.
Here's another one I'll throw at you. And this is a night game unimpeded by anything else on the schedule. It's in prime time, so you don't have to worry about flipping back and forth between that and something else. The Cowboys and the Eagles, and as ugly as that matchup could be, and probably as low as those ratings are going to be nationally because people will just check out at the quality of the football, here's my thought on this, Danny. I think that the Eagles, with a loss, become secondary to win the division behind Washington. And that's not me advocating that Rivera's bunch should be pushing their chips in or trying to make a bunch of trades or, you know, going all in, so to speak. I don't think they should do anything differently. I think they should just go out and play as hard as possible and coach as hard as possible and see if they win or lose every week and still be thinking about next year and the year after. But what I mean by that is my assumption all along was that Dallas is just better. They're more talented. That's no longer the case, particularly after the Dak injury.
Yeah,
definitely this
now.
Week if Dalton doesn't go. They're just worse, okay? So my default, my next thought is, well, the Eagles are just better. The Eagles haven't really shown that, but You know, they've lost some tough games where they played Pittsburgh and they played Baltimore better than bad teams typically do. But every time you think they're about to just pull away in the division, they almost lost to the Giants last week. I thought they would have won that game by 14. If they lose to the Cowboys, then this is just what they are. And Washington has a great chance to be better than them with a softer schedule the rest of the way.
Yeah, if Evan Engram catches the football, they lose to the Giants.
Right.
A bunch of things happen against the Giants. If the Giants behaved like a reasonable team at 25 different points, the Eagles are 1-5-1 and out of it. But before that, they played sneaky okay, as you touched on. Again, they lost to Pittsburgh and Baltimore. I think a lot of teams would lose to Pittsburgh and Baltimore. They went on the road and beat San Francisco. Again, kind of the punching bag here of this segment for me, talking about the Dolphins and what Philadelphia's done. But that Giants game kind of shook my confidence in them a little bit. I still think they are the best team of the worst division maybe in the history of sports. I still think they got the inside shot if they get a little bit healthier. Ertz comes back, maybe a lineman or two comes back. I think they'll be okay relative to the rest of this crappy division. But again, there's nothing forgiving about playing at Cleveland, Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans, and at Arizona in a row. That's not an easy stretch. The door's open here.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. A year ago today, the Nats beat the Astros in Game 7 and won the World Series. Just posted a video on Twitter this morning, if you want to check it out, at Grant H. Paulson, of walking out onto the field in the middle of the celebration as all the Nats were putting on their championship gear. That could give you some chills. I also posted some of the highlights of the 7 pitches that turned a 2-0 deficit into a 3-2 lead. Solo home run Rendon, walk Soto, home run off the foul pole Kendrick, that changed Washington, D.C. baseball forever. We will get into that magical run and how the Nats pulled off a title run that will live forever in the nation's capital as we celebrate the one-year anniversary next on Grant Day. The Nats World Series one-year anniversary celebration on The Fan is presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. Save 10% on windows and doors in October. Contact PaulHenrysWindows.com for details. We're Grant and Danny. Welcome back. You're locked into The Fan. It is a football Friday, but we are multitasking, DR. So why don't we start with when you think back to the World Series run, and I mean in its entirety, right? Because it was a month-long, maybe a 5 or so week-long journey of just giddiness and joy. And there was a little bit of a roller coaster of emotion, obviously. And we were up, we were down. But when you look back at that month that was unlike anything we've ever experienced other than the Caps Cup run, what's the first thing that jumps out at you as your favorite memory?
Getting further than they'd ever gotten. Speaking of the Caps Cup run, the parallels were obvious and glaring throughout. I mean, this was a team that at one point was struggling in the regular season, check on both fronts, a manager slash coach that wasn't that popular in the public, check, that there was rumblings around him, check, an unbelievable stretch, check, having to beat an arch rival that had gotten you before, check, Howie Kendrick's grand slam against the Dodgers, the same way Kuznetsov's goal against the Penguins, finally beating those bastards and sending those toothless goons home, was my favorite moment of that run because they'd finally gotten past that ceiling they couldn't get. Washington was in line for yet another Game 5 heartbreak. We'd done it against the Cardinals. We'd done it against the Dodgers. They'd done it against the Cubs, where this was absolutely a good team, absolutely had a great chance to win that Game 5. Eventually it works out, and it seemed like it never, ever would. You're playing maybe a team that probably they showed you this year how good they were. That team should have won the World Series last year, to be honest with you. How great the Dodgers were. They were the best on offense, the best at pitching, and a pretty damn good defensive team, too. They were awesome in every capacity. The Nationals finally got over that hump, and it was thanks to Howie Kendrick.
Outfield shades right, infield in all the way around. Turner and Seager on the left side, Hernandez and Muncy on the right. Kelly's one-strike pitch. Swinging a fly ball, center field deep. Bellinger going back to the warning track, to the wall. It's a grand slam! Howie Kendrick has done it! They're going crazy in the Nationals dugout. Howie Kendrick with a grand slam here in the 10th inning of Game 5. The Nationals 7, the Dodgers 3. Do you believe it?
I believe it because I saw it, Dave Jagler, sail over the wall to the 396 marker just to the right. And Kendrick, who'd had a tough series, robbed of some good chances for hits. Some other chances didn't come through. He had made three errors in the field, no doubt, not thinking about it then. And the Nationals' faith in him. 36-year-old Howie Kendrick with a grand slam in the 10th inning to put the Nats up by four. Unbelievable.
Howie, as you heard Charlie mention there, had struggled so much in the field and was at risk, Danny, of if they lose that game. Forget now that he's a World Series hero and he can do whatever he wants in D.C. for the end of the rest of his time. I mean, he would have been a GOAT and not the good kind, right? It would have been a memory where you look back and they collapsed and we go back through all the specifics and Kendrick's defensive miscues were a factor. But it's not just like they were able to push through and they finally got the big hit and he drops a single into center field and they win by a run. They knocked the door down with that grand slam. I mean, they took a anvil and they just charged. The whole house fell over. It was a bomb to center, and there was a party at home plate, and everyone was invited. It was a moment that was a decade in the making, it felt like.
Absolutely. And, you know, a veteran guy that's beloved, that, you know, that had come off his Achilles injury, wasn't clear what his role was going to be going forward, and he just, you know, had a frying pan in the field defensively, as you touched on. But I was going to say, coming out of the highlight, 97 on an 0-1 count, little below knee-high right on the inside corner. An actual great pitch by Joe Kelly, by the way. Looking to get a ground ball, probably the left side of the infield, broken bat, something like that, with the bases drunk. That ball goes to center field, and instinctively, having played thousands of baseball games in my life, having watched thousands of others, I'm going, I hope it's deep enough for a sack fly. Maybe Rendon on second can tag up and go to third. Maybe they can still get multiple runs out of this. Let's see what happens with Juan Soto on first base. Maybe he goes halfway, draws a throw, whatever. The idea that Bellinger turns around and starts to run, I'm going, no, that's wrong. He's misjudged it. Maybe it drops in for a single. Maybe it's a flare. The fact that he hit that ball to the right of center field on that swing is nearly impossible. Now, he would equal and double that with that cutter on the outside corner off the foul pole.
All of the things that you're saying, you could take the Will Harris Astros game 7 foul pole home run and say the same things about it. He did it twice in those playoffs.
100%. Human beings shouldn't be able to do what he did on that pitch, and yet he did it in the most important moment at that point in the club's history.
So that was, if I'm looking for a highlight, if I'm looking for a single on-field moment, that's in the conversation. I would put the Soto base hit against the Brewers that got him through the wild card game, and I'll talk later about why on the field maybe that's my memory that I'll never forget, and just my love for Juan Soto probably has a lot to do with that. You could go game 7, down 2-0, Rendon hits the homer, now Soto draws a walk. He's emphatic as he's going to first, doing the Soto hop, and I mean, he's trying to get into the head of the Astros, and then the next thing you see on the second pitch of his at-bat, Kendrick hits the ball off the foul pole, and they're in the lead 3-2 in Game 7. Any of those things would work. But, you know, when I ask what's the memory, and I started thinking about, like you did, the moments on the field, honestly, when I think about the Nats winning the World Series, I don't even think about the games first. I think about, personally, my experiences. I think about being at Nats Park for games 3, 4, and 5, and I know that they lost all three of those, but some of the great sporting experiences that I'll ever have. I bought tickets to all three games expensively, kind of blew out the budget. I figured I'm never going to get to do this again. And so I got four tickets to all three games. And for one of the games, I brought my best friends, a couple of whom I haven't even seen since. You know, it's that rare now. They've got kids. I've got kids. They've moved away. You don't get to see these people. These are people you care about. These are people in your life that means something to you. So we'll text, you know, and we communicate. But these are some of my buddies that are big baseball fans or big Nats fans, and they came to a game with me. And so the four of us were there watching a game. That was awesome. Another day, my mom, my dad came up, and I can count on two hands the number of times my parents have come up for dinner in Northern Virginia or D.C., and we've just had any kind of a night out, right? We all day long, we're in the Navy Yard, and we're having lunch, and then we're going to a World Series game in Washington, D.C., and experience that with my family was special. The third game, my brother and his wife went, and My wife's mom is a huge Nats fan. She got to go to the game, so the four of them were together, and I did get to go over and hang out with them a little bit, even though for that particular game I was kind of floating around the ballpark. But those are the memories. The parade itself, again, being around my family, mom and everyone coming up for the parade and going to lunch at Clyde's and just having that entire day of that happiness, the unbridled joy, everyone walking around being nice to each other. That's a community defining and a community, it just brought people together in a way that only I've ever experienced with the Capitals Cup run. And I've always loved sports, but I never knew what sports were capable of until that first championship. And I'll just never forget that feeling that is hard to bring into words, Danny, but of those days where everyone just wants to come by and high-five each other that they don't know. That's the part I'll never forget. Eating pizza, sitting outside of the new pizza joint over by the water in the Navy Yard, and all the people in their Nats gear on parade day that were just beside themselves with happiness. That's what I'll never forget.
No, it's 100%. I mean, I brought my dad to a World Series game for the Washington, D.C. team. You know, I never thought we'd get one. I never thought we'd have a team. I was just growing up in and around D.C., playing baseball here. The idea that we'd even have a team seemed impossible for, I don't know, 25 years of my life? And now it's, you know, the most routine, normal thing, of course, that we've got the Nationals. I try to never take that for granted, number one. But, yeah, as you said, hey, Dad, let me get you a ticket to the World Series. Let me buy you a ticket to the World Series game. It doesn't quite pay you back for the tens of thousands of miles you drove, tournaments, and, you know, gave up weekends to go to some god-awful stadium, or not even stadium, like some rec field at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday to watch me play some stupid game that would amount to nothing. You know, it's not quite payback enough, but let me put a deposit in the bank to try to make this level and balance. So, yeah, you're right. That was the absolute thrill. And the text change about potential lineup changes and who's going to pitch and, you know, all the different stuff, bringing guys together from across the country. I mean, gladly, a number of times over, guys that, you know, I haven't seen forever, but, you know, grew up with are like, okay, I'm flying in at this time. You know, who's going to be where? And, you know, we'll meet up here at this place, you know, before first pitch and do this and that. It's just everybody, of course, dropped everything and came. And that's what was so cool about it.
Tomorrow's Halloween. I don't remember, like, coming back from Houston and going right into Halloween mode. But I guess the baby was so young, she was just wearing her little baby shark costume, Nat style, that there was no trick-or-treating or anything to be done. But 1 year ago today, the Nationals won the World Series. Speaking of Halloween tomorrow, how you handling it? Are you letting the kids go trick-or-treating? Are you having people come to the door for candy? What are you passing out? I want to know what the Rouillets are doing. I'll tell you what the Paulson plan is next on G&D. Halloween is tomorrow. Welcome back. We're G&D. You're locked into 106.7 The Fan. Because of the pandemic and because coronavirus cases are spiking in many states and locales all over the country, I'd imagine Halloween is going to look very different in many communities and neighborhoods, and probably should, frankly. Here's the question, Danny. What are you guys doing? And I'm going to tell you what our plan is, because I've asked a couple of my neighbors, and the responses vary. I mean, I got neighbors to one side of me who have said that, you know, they're going to turn the lights off and not do it. It's not worth the risk. I got other folks who have said they're setting up projectors and they're going all out and they're going to be outside their house. Here is my plan. I want to see what you think.
Okay.
So I always go king-size candy bar that I'm passing out. That's just my move. That's what I do. I remember the euphoria of opening a door to say trick-or-treat and seeing that giant candy bar and thinking, this is the coolest person ever. I want to be this guy when I grow up. So I'm going to be passing out. I went and got like a full box off of the shelf of sleeves of Reese's cups that have like four cups in them, the full king-size sleeves. I've then got I wouldn't say it's a pack. A pack of M&Ms and Skittles is small. It's like a square. These are the long rectangles, like the sleeves. You feel me? So I've got those as well. And basically, you know, there's some Rice Krispie treats, some big, long Rice Krispie treats in there. Like, there's all kinds of options. It's all going to be good, but I've got so much of it. I bought dozens and dozens of these things because someone told me last year in my neighborhood, and we just moved there, like 100 people came through. Well, that's not happening this year. But I think the play is going to be that we're going to put everything kind of in multiple bowls by item, lay them out in the driveway, and then maybe we sit at the top of the driveway outside and just kind of, you know, interact or say hello to the people as they come through. But there's no, you know, they're never getting close. They're not knocking on the door, nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that is safe, reasonable, decent? Where are we at on that?
Yeah, that's as solid a plan as there is. I mean, the recommendation that I saw, and I, by the way, I want to thank a few people for tweeting me this, at Funny Danny, at Granite Pulson on Twitter. I was saying I haven't seen really any recommendations or what people are supposed to do for Halloween. And some folks actually sent me some really helpful what to do things, some good guidance. So I appreciate that. Sometimes the world does work. Individual bags are supposed to be the thing, right? So people don't have to go rummaging around in the same bowl, I suppose. So like individual little plastic bags with the
So even though my stuff is individually packaged,
yes.
The point is you don't want kids like sifting through and touching six of them. So I would have to take like the king size bar and put it in a bag.
That was the recommendation. I don't know how big a deal that is, to be honest with you. I don't know. I'm just providing information. So in terms of that, I think that's as good a plan as any, right? Where people, if kids are coming by, you're going to say hello. They get their candy. You know, this is the point, right? This is what we're doing. And in fact, it's probably more efficient than them knocking on the door, you answering it, you getting the ball. Where do you think it's supposed to be? Oh, you're a transformer. That's awesome. Or do you? Oh, that's cool too, pie. It's quicker. It's more efficient. Get to the next house. That's what it should be all about for the kids anyway. So for us, because we've got kids that want to do stuff, they don't want to just sit at home and greet people. We've been trying to figure out what the hell is going to happen. So it looks like this. It looks like we've been just sort of hanging out with, we've been hanging out with a very small, limited group of friends throughout this, you know, where we all feel pretty comfortable. That group is going to assemble, and it's like scavenger hunts. There's some candy inside some of the eggs. The older kids are going to be bored to tears after 6 or 7 seconds. But, like, the younger kids among us, like, maybe my oldest probably won't really feel it, but, like, my 2-year-old is going to love it. He'll go ape over the entire experience. So, but that's just kind of what it is. We're just going to sort of hang out. It's nowhere near the Halloween experience that the kids usually look forward to.
All right, I want to know, when you were trick-or-treating, think back to your glory days, what were your favorite things, your least favorite things to get? Because for me, I loved chocolate, but for some reason I would always get happier for, like, you didn't see the full sleeve of Starburst, as an example. So if someone gave you, not like a couple Starbursts or a pack with two, but like the full sleeve with the, you know, however many there are, 14 or 16 Starbursts, that was always like one of my go-tos. I love the big bag of Skittles. I was a big Twizzlers guy, so anyone who gave you like a pouch like they do at the movie theater with 4 or 8 Twizzlers was good. I loved M&Ms, but M&Ms, just again, the little square, small pack, that's fine. It didn't really move the needle for me.
That's a little shot. Yeah, that's a shot.
Yeah, I need a full bottle of M&Ms, right? I need a handle. So I wanted like the full sleeve, and then anything king size. Now, I'm not a caramel guy, not a candy bar guy. So when I say candy bar, like I would never eat a Snickers or you know my weird proclivities when it comes to candy. For me, it's either a Crunch bar, which I get steamed up for back in the day. Or maybe like just a Hershey's bar by itself, like from a s'more. That was always rare. Or it would be, I guess, just Reese's Cups or even any kind of like Kit Kat. Love a Kit Kat. So those are kind of my basic go-tos for Halloween.
King size 3 Musketeers bar was always a wonderful, wonderful bonus. And there was one family that did that, and you had to go early because they sold out. Sold out's not the right word, but you know what I mean. They would run out of those things, and then they'd be on to the little bite size. Fun size, it's not any fun to have a lot less of something that's delicious. Take the word fun out of it. Tiny. Call it tiny. That was always very good. The candy bar that I don't know if it was even around by the time you were trick-or-treating, but there were a couple families in our neighborhood that got them. You get them from the High Mart. Not Highs, but High Mart in Chesterbrook. The Bar None candy bar. The Bar None candy bar was a rich, dense explosion of multiple flavors, and it was perfect. I don't know why it didn't catch on as the greatest candy bar of all time. In my opinion, it is unparalleled with how delicious it was. There was a couple Bar None houses, and that was always good. They were full size as well. The Take Five bar, the you wanted to avoid the Mounds and Almond Joy house. There are a couple houses that really liked coconut in their candy. Coconut's terrible on its own. Coconut's even worse than candy. Stop doing that. You might as well just suck on a lemon. Gross, stupid, dumb, waste of time. So make sure that you have some variety there. I always welcome the Kit Kat, too. Those are my last supplements to what you're talking about.
Kit Kat is so good. Throw them in the freezer. Oh, they're money. I hated Milk Duds. I hated Whoppers. I think Smarties are hair thing and nubs, to quote the junkies.
Smarties were nubs.
Tootsie Rolls, just the original Tootsie Roll without any like of the additional flavors, the pink, the blue, or whatever. Those are terrible. I don't even know what they're called, but do you remember like the little, they're circularly wrapped with tails on either end that you have to like unfurl, right? So they're like twists on either end, and they're just orange and black. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
I would find a picture for you. It almost looks like if you wrapped a peppermint, you know, it's in the clear plastic so you can look right through and see the red and white peppermint. But this was, you couldn't see through it, and it was like orange and black Halloween color. Hated those. My mom loves Good and Plenty's. I think Good and Plenty's are the pits. Anyone who gave out black licorice, that was awful.
Oh, just
Necco wafers can kick every rock. Candy corn, I kind of undulate on. I don't want it on Halloween, I can tell you that. I don't want it when I'm trick-or-treating. If I never eat it again, I'd be perfectly fine, by the way.
Sure.
But I think it gets a little bit of a bad rap. But those are some of the things when I would get those where I would just think in my head, you know, do better. I'm not an adult, but when I'm an adult, I'm probably not going to be giving out Smarties, I can tell you that.
Because my boys and I in the neighborhood were so proficient at, you know, we would do a move where we would go early and find all the bowls, right? We would go one round early to find, that's all we were doing, was canvassing the neighborhood at kind of a slow jog looking for bowls. You do one early round, get back, empty your bucket, find a safe storage facility, then go out at the same time as everybody else and do the normal trick-or-treating. I mean, that was our normal routine. And so by that point, you'd stockpiled. You kept this mental checklist. Like, how many Starbursts do I have? How many Snickers do I have? How many Three Musketeers? So if given a choice, sometimes you're going, you know what I don't have? I don't have a York peppermint patty to cleanse my palate as I'm gorging myself with candy. I don't have any fruit, so I don't have any Skittles-type things, because Skittles is very fruity. It's based on fruit. A lot of people don't know that. It's a very fruity type texture and taste there. It's very delicious. It's not sugar. It's about fruit. But then you go, well, do I have peanut M&Ms? So you would make some odd choices in real time for people that didn't realize the background of what had happened, because you already been stocked up on so much of food.
Football Friday, Grant and Danny will get set for Week 8 with Will Britton.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.